RS intervju.
Na Brdu pri Kranju danes slavijo 20. obletnico priključitve Slovenije k Severnoatlantski pogodbeni organizaciji, znani kot NATO. Vsako leto se ravno v obdobju zgodnje pomladi spominjamo okupacije Iraka, ki jo je leta 2003 na čelu z Združenimi državami Amerike izvedla koalicija voljnih. Teren za okupacijo so si ZDA pripravljale vse od leta 1990 oziroma od tako imenovane prve zalivske vojne. Takrat so Združenimi narodi proti Iraku uvedle kaznovalne gospodarske sankcije, ki so povsem demoralizirale iraško družbo in uničile državne institucije. Zaradi sankcij je prišlo do pomankanja zdravil, hrane in čiste vode, kar je po prvotnih ocenah UNICEF-a vodilo v smrti več kot 500 000 otrok mlajših od 5 let. Namesto, da bi tovrstne dosežke slavili, kot bodo to danes počeli slovenski državniki, bomo skušali zločine med okupacijo Iraka izpostaviti in analizirati. Pogovarjali se bomo z Iračanom Džafarjem Al-Salmanom, ki nam bo predstavil lastne izkušnje, podkrepljene s politično analizo dogajanja pred in med okupacijo Iraka ter po njej.
How do you see the US-led coalition of willing invasion of Iraq in 2003 today? And how do you see, or how do you think that it has determined the Iraqi society for the future?
Like, the American invasion of Iraq was like the Mongols' invasion of Baghdad, where they left nothing but destructions. They dismantled all the state security and service institutions. There is nothing left that is called the Iraqi state. They destroyed everything, nothing was left undestroyed. This is what made the security situation in Iraq unstable. This was what they wanted.
So, did you maybe, before the invasion, expect that the invasion will really happen?
Yeah, people expect that the invasion will happen because after like 13 or 12 years of siege of Iraq. So it was just maybe a moment this will happen, you know, so people was, you know, prepared for that. And but they don't know when exactly this will happen.
And what was your first thought that went through your mind when you...
Because, you know, as Iraqi people, we always... We have been through many wars, and so we used to it. We had a war with Iran like for 8 years, so people are always, prepared for this kind of situation, like war. But they never expect that we will be under, occupation of the American. You know, like we will leave this situation, like. So they didn't, maybe no one believed that, the American could remove Saddam Hussein, they could remove that regime, because that regime was so strong and controlling all the state, you know. So it was unbelievable for us, you know, like to see the American in Baghdad and, you know, doing what they did. And yeah.
So, did you or any of the people that you maybe know, so friends or family, get to see in person any of the personnel of the occupation forces, so soldiers, officials, or maybe some other stuff?
Yeah, like we always saw American military convoys in the streets of Iraq. And sometimes we saw Iraqi resistance fighters like firing fire and missiles at American forces, and sometimes, you know, like we are passing on the car by these American military convoys, and most of the time they are not treating people nice. This is also was one of the reasons that people are resisting, you know, because they killed like many civilians and for nothing, and sometimes only for fun, you know, like just to have fun. So mostly it was a bad experience, you know. Yeah.
Okay, let us turn a bit further into the history. Like, Iraq was under strong economic sanctions basically since the first so-called Gulf War in 1990. So these sanctions caused malnutrition, lack of clear water and medicines, a very bad economic situation in general. So could you elaborate a bit on this, like how it was in this 13-year period in Iraq? So from 1990 to 2003 invasion of the US light forces.
Yeah, like Iraq was a rich country full of natural resources, and the Iraqi people were rich people who ate the best food. There was no, you know, poverty in Iraq. But after the siege, people suffered the worst moments of their lives, as millions died from hunger and lack of medicines. Most of those who died were children. People were living a beautiful and generous life, and people died. You know, like, no one, like, you know, all the Iraqi people, like, before 1991, they were all, like, like no one was poor, you know, in that time, and they were all having a good life, living normally, and no one suffered from hunger, or there is a moment they will think they will die because there is no food around, or, you know, or they can see their children, you know, like in, like sick, and they cannot get any of this medicine, you know, to help their children, you know. So this was like really bad time, and some people, like, they start to eat anything, you know, like some, you know, some stuff they didn't think like they will eat, or but they did to just to survive, and this was also a part that, you know, that the Americans want the people to hate the regime, like the state. So the people are, well, you know, to turn the people against the regime, because they said, look, our problem is with Saddam. So if you go against Saddam, we will help you. Because of us, you are suffering like this. No, it's because of Saddam. And Saddam, I'm not a big fan of Saddam, but he was also dictator, and he wasn't the best, and like for Iraq, you know, like before him, we had like much better of life, you know, like since he ruled, like it was always war, you know, like, you know, he became a president in 1979, then after 1 year, you know, war starts, and war is just war and war and war, and all this, the previous governments, what they did, it was like, you know, they did all good, you know, like the Iraqi economy was strong. People had like wealthy life. And, but when Saddam take the lead, all that, you know, collapsed. And then this was the results, you know, like, and he thought that Iraq is so strong to fight and to face, you know, the powerful countries like America. And this was the result, you know, like, you cannot fight America, like, because in the end, you will lose. Yeah.
So would you say that even though that Iran-Iraq war lasted for 8 years, so yeah, basically whole of the 80s, mm-hmm, the situation in Iraq was much better in the 80s than under US sanctions in the 90s.
Yeah.
Because, despite the war.
Yeah, because mostly, you know, it was mostly war was on the border, you know, like, so it's like, so, sometimes, you know, sometimes they go like deeply, like, you know, to Baghdad, like they shot it with some missiles, but mostly it's on the border, so people still can live normally. It's not that you are under some, you know, some, like, it's still your country, you know, like, still you are doing your daily life. But when the Americans, they came and they destroy everything, you know, like, nothing was left working. Like, they bombed all the bridge, like, all the schools, all hospitals, you know, like, nothing was working, you know, like, so this was, like, the worst moment.
Okay, so after the 2003 invasion, the political representative system in Iraq was divided on the principle basically of both the religious, so Sunni-Shia divide, and also ethnic divide, so the Kurdish-Arabic divide.
Yeah.
And some call this process Balkanization or Lebanonization because the situation is similar in the Balkans and in Lebanon. And some political analysts say that the Sunni-Shia division, so-called sectarianism, so hatred between Sunni and Shia, was artificially made by the occupation forces. Do you believe that, or do you think that the so-called sectarianism existed even before 2003 invasion?
You know, like, if you want to conquer country, you have to divide people there. So Sunni and Shia, they are like, they were one, you know, like, we didn't have any of this issue, you know, like, who want, like Shia should lead or Sunni should lead. It was like one state, and like, you can see, like, some minister, he's Sunni, or the prime minister, he's Shia, or the president, he's a Kurdi, like, for example, you know. So we didn't have this issue, you know, like Sunni and Shia fighting each other. But, you know, in 1991 or two, you know, when the Kurdish start to do this, their struggle, you know, they wanted to have a state, or this starts before that, like, in during the war between Iraq and Iran. Some Kurds took the Iranian side because the Iranian promised them they will become leader in Iraq in the future, so they give them some military supplies and weapon, you know. So then they couldn't do a big effect on Iraq. So then the Iranian, they abandoned them and they left them alone. Then the Americans, they come and they said, okay, we will be on your side. So what they did, they divide the Kurds first. So this is the north of Iraq. The Americans are sure they control it. They already control it. And this is the mountains. So if the Americans will have fight in the mountains, this will be bad for them, you know. So, like what happened in Afghanistan, because it's mostly, it's, you know, mountains, so they couldn't control it, because, and this fight was, you know, how to say, like, useless, because you cannot fight people in the mountain. So they divide the court, then they come to the Sunni and the Shia. What to do some religious issue between these two guys, because in the beginning the Iraqi resistance was Shia and Sunni, they were both fighting America back. So some Sunnis, some militia, Sunni, they were fighting, and some militia Shia, they were fighting. Then the American, I think they bring Al Qaeda, because they who established Al Qaeda? It's America. So they brought them to Iraq. And they said, okay, let's make this, you know, scenario that the Sunni fighting Shia, you know, let's do some explosion in, like, Shia area. And let's say the Sunni did that. And let's do it also in the Sunni area, some explosion. And then we said, okay, the Shia did it. Then this civil war starts in 2006. And, for example, we were living together, you know, this is a neighborhood, your neighbor is Sunni or Shia. This hate become bigger and bigger. And the American, they were feeding this hate. And then if you are in a neighborhood, the majority is Sunni, and so if the Shia have to leave. Or if you are in a neighborhood, the majority is Shia, so the Sunni have to leave. So this was like a really big problem in Iraq. Like many people were killed, like thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people were killed. And the worst moment, it was when there is like really religious, like important religious mosque in Samarra. It's the majority of that city, it's Sunni. This holy place, it was for the Shia. This was like the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, and it's really a holy place for the Shia. And they explode that place, and or that mosque. And then the Shia, like, they really get angry because this was in the Sunni area, and why the Sunni didn't protect it, why the Sunni did. So the blame was on the Sunni people. And it could be a bigger war, but then some leader Shia, they said, you know, you have to calm down. We are all like Iraqis. We are all brothers. It's, you know, there is someone else behind this. It's not the Sunni on that area. So then from that moment, you know, this civil war almost stopped, you know, for a while, not forever, but for a while.
So do like, for example, in Baghdad,
yeah.
Do like neighborhoods where only Shia or only Sunni live still exist, like Sadr City?
Yeah.
Do maybe some Sunnis live in Sadr City?
No, it's not like before, you know, because, you know, when this civil war started in 2006, they you know, they start to put, they put some walls around neighborhoods just to separate it, you know, for security reasons. Like, now it's better, you know, like the situation, like Shia and Sunni lives together again, you know, like after this, all this war, like between the Shia and Sunni, and when the ISIS came to Iraq, you know, and so now everything is okay. Like, we don't hear, like, you know, like this issue, it's not exist anymore, you know, like before, like people are more like accepting each other.
Mm-hmm. But what about the state institutions? You mentioned at the beginning of the interview that Iraq, you can hardly say about the Iraq institutions that they even exist, but if you elaborate maybe a bit more, how, like 20 years after the invasion, like how do you see the social mechanisms of the state institutions in Iraq today? How strong are they? Do they help people in a sense that they help before the invasion, or before the sanctions?
We are suffering of corruption. Like many of Iraqi leaders there who are in the government or in really high positions, they are really corrupt. Socially, it's not the worst there, but, you know, it's not the best. It could be much better. But I think mostly are some, you know, some volunteer organizations, they are trying to help other people, you know, like, you know, we have these human rights and other things, but it's not really affected there, you know, so it's not working well, you know. We said like we are a democratic country, but it's not really like that, you know. So we have a lot of militia there. They are powerful and they can do whatever they want. They are not smart people, but they are powerful, so they can do whatever they want. And so, for example, we said we have all these laws and these rules, but there's, you know, many people there, they are above the law. So they don't care about it, and they just use it when it's on their side. So for them good. If it's not for them good, they just keep it. And
okay. I, for the end, prepared one last question. What would you say to the people in Slovenia that support the US-led invasions in the world and NATO pact?
You know, they said, you know, the reason why they established NATO to defend Europe. But it's the opposite. Wherever the NATO went, they didn't leave nothing, just, you know, destructions. Like, wherever they go, they make a big mess. And we can see, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Afghanistan, and all these countries, they were, suffered because of NATO. And they always said, the regime in that country, it's really bad, so we have to change it for a better one. But we never saw this, you know. I mean, even if that regime is bad, but that regime is presenting, how to say, like a system, you know. It's at least it's work, you know. It works for those people, you know. But now we can see the results. Millions of people are migrants now because of these wars. Some people here are said, like, they're against immigrations. Why this immigration exists? Because of these wars, you know. Otherwise, you won't see these people here, you know, and you will see them there in their countries and living peacefully. So I think NATO is the worst terrorist organization in the world. And they always claimed that they are, they wanted to free these people, or they want to free Iraqi people, or they want to free the Afghani people, or they want to free the Libyan people, and they want to bring the democracy and the freedom. But it's just a big lie. They always do the opposite, and they make the situation worse and worse wherever they go. So I think we have to stop supporting NATO. And because for me, NATO is it's like pure evil, you know, like really pure evil.
Okay, so we came to the end of our interview. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for taking your time and for great answers.
Thank you. Thanks for the radio student for this opportunity.
It's our pleasure.
Thanks.
Z Džafarjem al-Salmanom se je pogovarjal Finn, ki se bo čez nekaj trenutkov javil s protesta proti NATO v Ljubljani.
Ereš intervju. We're gonna make it.